When you take a kid to an amusement park, there is always that sign at the front of the big roller coasters, like, you must be this tall to ride.
Right, the classic cutout sign.
Exactly. And you don't really question it, do you? I mean, you don't stand there and complain, like, oh, that's just bureaucratic red tape stopping my kid from having a good time.
No, of course not.
Right.
You understand it's a physical, structural safety limit.
Right. If the physical safety harness cannot secure you, you do not get on the ride. It really is that simple.
Because the engineering of the ride simply doesn't match the biology of a child. I mean, if their shoulders don't reach the restraints, the G-force is literally going to throw them out. It's a binary physical reality that we all just accept.
We totally accept it. But then you look at the digital world, you look at the apps right there on your phone or, your kid's phone, and suddenly that must be this tall to ride sign is completely missing.
It's just not there.
Which brings us to today. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are taking a look at a massive, comprehensive body of research that argues why age restrictions, we're talking specifically 18 plus limits on platforms like Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, why these are no longer just old school parenting strictness.
Well, the data we are unpacking today argues that these restrictions are actually an essential biological defense line for a whole new generation's mental architecture.
Exactly. Because honestly, we aren't just talking about teenagers wasting a lazy afternoon in their rooms. The reality the data paints is incredibly stark. Like, we are talking about severe algorithmic addiction, permanent digital footprints that follow them into adulthood, and this is the crazy part, a drastic rewiring of the fundamental human attention span.
It's a total rewiring, and we're going to break down the actual mechanics of this, not just the what, but the why and the how. We're looking across neuroscience, psychology, behavioral data, basically to explain exactly how these platforms hack the developing brain, line by line.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if we want to understand the behavioral impacts, we have to start by looking at the literal machinery being manipulated, right? We have to look at the brain itself.
We do. And the foundational concept driving all of this is a psychological mechanism called intermittent reinforcement.
Intermittent reinforcement. Okay, break that down for us.
So to understand how this works, think about a casino slot machine. When you pull the lever on a slot machine, the reward isn't guaranteed, right?
Right, you usually lose.
Exactly. But it is the unpredictability that hooks you. Like, will you win big? Will you get nothing? That uncertainty actually causes the brain to release far more dopamine, which is the chemical associated with pleasure and anticipation, than if you knew you were getting a reward every single time.
Oh, wow. So knowing is actually less exciting to the brain than not knowing.
Exactly. And short-form video platforms, they code this exact same behavioral loop into their algorithms. You swipe the screen and you don't know what you're going to get. Will it be a hilarious prank? A boring dance? A thrilling stunt?
Right. You're just pulling the lever again and again.
Yes. That unpredictability pumps cheap, incredibly fast dopamine directly into the nervous system.
It's wild to think about, like, handing a 13-year-old a literal slot machine to just keep in their pocket all day. And I mean, dopamine is powerful stuff. But adult brains handle dopamine spikes all the time, right? What is happening differently in a teenager's brain when they start swiping?
Well, this is where the biological mismatch occurs.
Mm-hmm.
So the part of the brain responsible for decision-making, weighing long-term consequences, basic impulse control, that's at the prefrontal cortex.
Okay.
And that region of the brain does not fully finish developing until a person is roughly 25 years old.
25.
Yep, around 25. So when teens under 18 interact with this highly engineered dopamine loop, they are biologically incapable of resisting the addiction.
Yeah.
Like, the neurological hardware required to stop still hasn't been installed yet.
I was reading that and thinking it's like putting a massive high horsepower engine into a car, but just forgetting to install the brake pads. Like, you can hit the gas, but you have literally no physical mechanism to stop the momentum.
That's a perfect way to look at it.
And the statistics show us exactly what happens when there are no brakes. Get this. The average teen today spends 95 minutes a day on TikTok, opening the app 19 separate times.
19 times a day.
Yeah. On Instagram, it's 78 minutes. On Snapchat, 62 minutes.
And when you aggregate those numbers, you are looking at well over 4 hours of daily use.
4 hours. I actually did the math on this before we started. That equates to over 1,400 hours a year. That is 60 full days out of a single year, just completely lost to swiping. Gone.
60 days. And what is truly alarming is the residual effect of those 60 lost days on the brain's fundamental ability to process information.
Right, it's not just time down the drain.
No, it's altered processing.
Mm.
The brain's reward system basically becomes conditioned to a 15-second payoff. And if you're used to getting a massive hit of dopamine every 15 seconds, your brain literally loses the capacity to sustain focus for, say, a 300-page book or a complex math problem.
It's just moving too slow for them.
Exactly. The neural pathways literally need to be debugged. In fact, the data points out that average attention spans have plummeted from 12 minutes back in the year 2000 to under 8 seconds today in 2026.
Under 8 seconds. I mean, you always hear that compared to the attention span of a goldfish, which sounds a funny joke, but biologically, 8 seconds is a terrifying threshold.
Yeah.
Doesn't the brain need longer than that to actually form a memory?
It does. Working memory takes around 10 to 15 seconds of sustained focus to effectively transfer information into long-term memory.
Wow.
Yeah. So if your attention is resetting every 8 seconds to process a new video, those long-term memories are never crystallizing. You are essentially living in a constant, fragmented present.
That is so heavy. When you have a brain physically stripped of its brake pads, unable to form long-term memories, and absorbing endless hits of dopamine, the obvious question becomes, what exactly are they absorbing? Like, what are they staring at for 4 hours a day?
Well, they certainly aren't staring at reality. They're staring at a highly warped, meticulously filtered world. The research refers to these platforms as a showcase of filtered lives.
Right.
And we're not just talking about putting a sepia tone over a photo anymore. We're talking about sophisticated AI that geometrically remaps a teenager's jawline, widens their eyes, and smooths their skin texture in real-time video.
Here's where it gets really interesting. You have teenagers sitting in their bedrooms, looking at their own messy, awkward, behind the scenes reality, and they're unfairly comparing it to everyone else's AI-generated, perfectly lit showcase.
And that unequal comparison is devastating. There's a specific, tragic example highlighted in the data of a teen girl who developed a habit of trying on beauty filters 50 times a day.
50.
50. And every time she applied the filter, the AI showed her an impossibly perfect version of herself. Eventually, the contrast between that digital avatar and her actual reflection became just too much for her developing brain to reconcile.
Oh no.
She began to genuinely hate her real face, to the point where she was unable to look in a physical mirror without holding up her phone screen to filter her reflection.
That is horrifying. I mean, are these AI filters essentially acting as a form of like digital plastic surgery? It seems like they are permanently altering a teenager's baseline expectation for what a human face is biologically supposed to look like.
They absolutely are. It creates entirely unattainable non-human goals. And the psychological toll is quantifiable. 70% of teen girls report that Instagram actively makes them feel worse about their bodies.
70%.
Furthermore, when teens between the ages of 13 and 17 use social media for more than 3 hours a day, the data shows a 3 times increase in clinical depression and anxiety.
A 3x increase. And you can see it manifesting in the physical world too. There has been a staggering 40% jump in actual cosmetic surgeries for people under 18 in the last 5 years. And surgeons directly link this to teens bringing in filtered photos of themselves from Instagram.
Right. It's a severe spike in youth anxiety driven by the desperate need to maintain this perfect, impossible image. And once a teenager builds that impossibly perfect avatar, the real nightmare begins because they have to maintain it.
Right, because you can't just log off. The moment you step away, your digital status is threatened, which leads us into the 247 trap of FOMO, the fear of missing out. But what I found fascinating in the research is that FOMO isn't just an accidental side effect of kids liking their phones. It's a deliberate, engineered cyber strategy.
It is entirely by design. The platforms utilize specific mechanics to trigger that fear. Features like 24-hour stories that disappear if you don't watch them in time, constant push notifications, and online status badging.
Oh, the green dot.
Exactly. Think about what that green online dot does to a teenager. It broadcasts their availability to their entire social hierarchy. It is all engineered to make them feel a visceral panic that they're missing the party if they put the device down.
And the daily timeline of this vigilance sounds utterly grueling. Imagine being a kid living this schedule, waking up at 6 a.m., heart already racing, immediately grabbing the phone in the dark to check for overnight messages. Then, from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at school, they are asking for bathroom passes or sneaking looks under the desk every 10 to 15 minutes, which obviously torpedoes any chance of academic
And
focus.
then comes the afternoon, which is an endless scroll that drains whatever mental energy they have left. But the usage actually peaks at night. from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m.
Before bed.
Exactly. And this is where the biological damage compounds. Staring at a screen during those hours blasts the retinas with blue light. Biologically, that blue light tricks the brain's pineal gland into thinking it is high noon, which completely suppresses the production of melatonin, the hormone you need for sleep.
So they can't fall asleep. And even when they do, the research notes that many are waking up at midnight just to check notifications.
Right.
Like they are living their entire adolescence in a constant state of standby.
There is zero mental bandwidth left to actually experience the present moment. They are constantly projecting their awareness into the digital space.
So what does this all mean for their future? To me, it points out a really cruel irony. The features that are designed to feel the most fleeting, the most casual, like a 24-hour story that vanishes or a message that supposedly deletes itself, are actually tricking teens into building a permanent, indestructible digital footprint.
That illusion of disappearing content is perhaps the most dangerous trap for a young brain. A 15-year-old simply lacks the cognitive foresight to understand the concept of data permanence. They think, in the short term, they might post something highly inappropriate, realize 5 minutes later was a terrible mistake, and delete it. To them, it's gone.
But in those 5 minutes, 20 people took screenshots. And that exact deleted post, which they thought vanished into thin air, could be the exact reason they fail a background check for a job interview 10 years later when they are 25.
And the data harvesting goes so far beyond screenshots. The checklist of what these platforms quietly store is massive. We are talking about untagged facial recognition data.
Wait, untagged?
Yes. That means even if a child isn't explicitly tagged in a photo, the platform's AI has already mapped the biometric geometry of their face. They are also storing exact physical GPS locations, deleted private messages, granular search histories, and device IP addresses.
Actually, explain that piece quickly, the IP addresses. Why does a kid's IP address matter?
Well, an IP address acts as a digital home address for your internet connection.
Huh.
By logging that, along with all the other behavioral data, companies can definitively link an anonymous profile or a supposedly deleted account right back to a specific individual's physical household. All of this data sits on servers, ready to be accessed by future employers, university admissions boards, or governments. They're essentially trading their permanent privacy for a temporary hit of dopamine.
But what happens when that everyday scrolling no longer satisfies them? When the brain's dopamine receptors get burned out from the 24/7 FOMO, teens start seeking increasingly extreme ways to get noticed, you know, to feel that rush again.
Yeah, that exhaustion pushes them into highly dangerous territory, the viral challenges. And here we have to go back to the biological reality of the prefrontal cortex. The teen reward system, the part that intensely craves social validation, is hyperactive. Mm-hmm. But the risk assessment system is incredibly weak.
Now, let me push back on this for a second, because I grew up in the 1980s, and teenagers were absolute idiots back then, too.
I mean,
we were building rickety ramps out of scrap plywood and jumping BMX bikes over them, breaking collarbones left and right. Teenagers doing reckless dares isn't exactly new. How is what we are seeing today actually any different from the reckless teens of the past?
It's a fair point, but the difference today comes down to scale, algorithmic amplification, and the quantifiable nature of the peer pressure.
Okay, how so?
In the 1980s, you jumped a bicycle over a plywood ramp in front of, what, 3 friends in a suburban backyard. The social reward was localized. Today, algorithmic amplification means a teenager is performing that dare for potentially millions of strangers. The peer pressure isn't just a few kids clapping. It is quantified in real time by a view counter clicking up by the thousands.
And the algorithms promoting this content are entirely age blind, right? They don't know who is watching.
Exactly. The algorithm doesn't know what a 13-year-old is cognitively prepared to see. An algorithm only measures engagement velocity, which is how fast people are watching and sharing a video.
Right.
Because teenagers lack impulse control, they tend to share shocking, reckless videos incredibly fast. This tricks the AI into heavily promoting lethal content straight onto a 13-year-old's For You page. It throws them into complex, emotional, sexual, and dangerous content they have no capacity to process.
And these viral challenges are genuinely lethal. This isn't a scraped knee from a bicycle ramp. We are talking about the blackout challenge, where kids use shoelaces to choke themselves to the point of passing out on camera. The Benadryl challenge, which encourages acute hallucinations by taking massive overdoses of allergy medication.
It's terrifying.
The Skullbreaker challenge, the Fire challenge, and the Outlet challenge, where they are taught to slide a metal coin into a half-plugged electrical charger to create sparks. Dozens of kids have died died globally trying to get a viral hit from these exact trends.
It is literal life or death, driven by an algorithm optimizing for attention. And the research ultimately frames this entirely as a stolen childhood. If you take a step back and compare the lived experience of a teenager in the year 2000 to the year 2026, the contrast is heartbreaking.
It really is.
An entire generation has largely swapped physical outdoor play, messy imagination, and deep, unrecorded friendships for infinite scrolling, shallow follower counts, and this pervasive, quiet loneliness.
They are forced to act as, like, public relations managers for their own lives, constantly branding themselves rather than just being allowed to be awkward, growing humans. Their fundamental self-worth has been outsourced to a view counter. So knowing all of these severe biological mechanisms, the dopamine loops, the AI facial mapping, the age-blind algorithms, we have to shift gears. Diagnosing the problem is one thing. How do families actually build the scientific defense line the research is calling for?
The first major intervention the data supports is the 18-plus limit. Now, is passing a law or putting a block on a phone a magic wand? No. Teens are resourceful, but it acts as a vital layer of friction.
A speed bump.
Yes. It buys crucial time for that prefrontal cortex to develop the biological breaks we talked about earlier.
But every parent listening knows the immediate crushing pushback they get from their kid. But literally all my friends are on it. You're ruining my social life. Like, how do you handle that?
And that is a very real, very painful pressure for a kid to feel. The experts advise that parents must stand firm, but they cannot just create a void. If you take away the digital connection, you must replace it with healthy, real-world alternatives. Group sports, physical art classes, community volunteering. You have to actively fund and support their real-world engagement.
You also need to know the specific signs of algorithmic addiction to watch for. It's not just, oh, they're using the phone a lot. The red flags include sudden, unexplained grade drops, total withdrawal from family activities, extreme visceral anger when the device is restricted, and using the platforms for over 3 hours daily. And we should make a clear distinction here. Not all digital platforms are doing the same damage.
That is a critical nuance. The short-form video algorithms, TikTok, Instagram Reels, YouTube Shorts, are significantly more damaging to attention spans than, say, a family WhatsApp group used to coordinate rides and share photos. The communication tools are not the enemy. The infinite scroll dopamine loops are.
To help navigate all of this, the research lays out 10 golden rules for parents. And a few of them really stand out. Number one is simply delaying the introduction of a smartphone for as long as socially possible. Another is writing a physical digital contract before ever handing a device over to a child. But honestly, a physical contract sounds great in theory, but how do you actually enforce that without turning your house into a police state?
You don't enforce it like a warden. You enforce it through environmental design. That's where the rule about phone-free zones comes in.
Okay, tell me more about that.
So the kitchen table is phone-free. The car is phone-free. Most importantly, the bedroom at night is phone-free. You buy a cheap digital alarm clock for their nightstand, and the phone charges in the living room overnight. You don't have to police their every swipe if the environment naturally limits their access during critical hours.
That makes a lot of sense. Limit the use to 1 hour a day for anyone under 16. Use the parental controls built into the operating systems and keep an open dialogue. Like, you can't just ban these apps blindly. You have to explain the neuroscience to them. Treat them like young adults who deserve to know how their brains are being hacked.
And perhaps the most difficult rule for adults to swallow.
Yeah.
Parents have to model good behavior themselves. You cannot lecture your teenager about the dangers of TikTok while you are mindlessly scrolling through X or Facebook at the dinner table.
Oh, absolutely guilty of that one.
We all are. But technology regulation has to go hand in hand with active digital literacy education within the family unit.
The research concludes with a really powerful metaphor to sum up the entire dynamic we've been discussing today, and I think it perfectly lands the plane. It compares social media to a turbocharger.
Yes. A turbocharger forces immense power and pressure into an engine. But a teenager's developing nervous system is a weak, unfinished engine block. If you apply the massive social pressure of a turbocharger to an engine that isn't built to handle it, you blow the head gasket. The machine breaks. The driver needs to learn how to steer, and the engine block needs time to cure before you ever hit the gas.
I really love that analogy because it reminds you that as a parent, an aunt, a teacher, or a mentor, you have to be the primary filter. You have to act as the biological algorithm for the child until their brain is fully built and capable of doing the filtering for themselves.
And that is the core takeaway of all this data. Enforcing age limits on social media isn't about being strict. It isn't about ruining a kid's fun or policing their friendships. It is quite literally about giving the human brain the 25 years it structurally requires to finish building its own internal defenses against addiction, body dysmorphia, and algorithmic manipulation.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, we want to leave you with a final lingering thought to mull over.
If this current generation is having the crucial, messy years of their childhoods entirely replaced by artificial algorithmic approval, what is going to happen to our society's definitions of true empathy, of original art, and of genuine human connection when they become the adults designing the next wave of human technology?
That is a heavy, monumental question, but it's one we all need to be asking right now. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the digital world around you. Look out for the kids in your life. And remember, if the ride doesn't have a safety harness, maybe we shouldn't let them get on just yet. Catch you next time.